Welcome back to Radio Times. The accordion has gone through periods of popularity and unpopularity. Our guest, Joe Soprani, has ridden those ups and downs and is an acclaimed virtuoso player who was born and lives here in the Philadelphia area. He began playing the accordion when he was a little boy and within a few years was performing on local radio and TV shows. That led to an appearance on the Arthur Godfrey Show, a stint with the USO, the U.S. Air Force Band, a concert with the Philadelphia Orchestra, performances with tenor Luciano Pavarotti, Bon Jovi, and many others. He taught for many years in the Philadelphia public school system. He'll be performing on Sunday night, March 9th at the World Cafe Live when a documentary about him, Dizzy Fingers, has its debut. Joe Soprani joins us on Radio Times. He has brought his accordion, and it's a great pleasure. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty. It's a pleasure for me to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here. And also with us is the film's director, Brendan McGeehan, who's also a recording engineer. And Brendan, nice to have you with us on Radio Times
Thank
as
you.
Well. You know, I was watching Brendan's film in rough cut in preparation for the show. And I have to say, Joe Soprani, you play with a great deal of joy and passion. Was it always that way for you and the accordion?
Most of the time. But early on, it was work. And I think I have to thank my mother for keeping me at it. I wanted to go out and play ball with my buddies and friends. And so, no, I had to practice before I went out. In fact, I used to have a buddy of mine up the street. I'd be practicing in the second floor, and he'd throw pebbles up at the window. And he says, "When are you coming out to play?" I said, "I can't. I have another hour to practice."
And why did your mother want you to play the accordion?
Well, she just saw possibilities. I guess she saw more potential in me than I knew at the time. And it was through the help of my grandfather who helped us along our way as I was growing up.
And I'm assuming, there's a picture in the documentary, you know, you're a five-year-old boy with a tiny little accordion.
Yes, it was.
Right?
It was a 12-bass accordion, and that's what I started with.
Yeah. And was that a popular instrument? This is 75 years ago.
A long time ago. Yes, it was. I think everyone had an accordion in the closet. But during the late 60s, when the Beatles came along, that kind of killed the accordion popularity.
The guitar sort of stole the thunder of the accordion?
Absolutely, yes, it did. And we're having such a difficult time getting it back to where it used to be. Everybody's saying, oh, the accordion is going through a renaissance. I see some of it only because of the internet, and
right.
It's loaded with accordion projects and websites. They're all over the place, especially the accordion world. It's one of the largest in the world, and you see hours and hours of accordion, and I'm just wondering if people are going to get tired of it.
No. I don't think so. Brendan, let me get you in on the conversation. Why did you want to make a film about Joe Soprani?
Sure. Well, the story goes, I guess, that I met Joe through a mutual friend, and the friend had said that Joe had this home studio and he needed an engineer to kind of show him the ropes a little bit. Originally, it was Joe wanting to learn Pro Tools. And learning that there was this 80-year-old guy that wanted to learn this pretty advanced software,
two
I thought
thumbs
was
up for
yeah,
him,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So that was intriguing enough. But we would meet about once a week to do these sessions, and I would record Joe playing, and then afterwards we would sit and have a cup of coffee or something like that, and he would tell me some stories about his life, just kind of off the cuff. And this went on for about a year, and it just kind of occurred to me that this is, he's a subject, and he's a charismatic guy and someone whose story needs to be told. And I had just kind of gotten into filmmaking at that time. So I thought that making a documentary about his life would be a great tribute to this guy.
Indeed. Well, you have brought an accordion with you. It says Hohner?
Hohner.
Hohner
Gola.
And this is, you were telling me before we went on the air, this is about, you bought it in the 60s, I guess.
Yes. And I was doing a function once, and a gentleman came up to me, and he says, "How old's that accordion?" I said, "Oh, it's got to be at least 10 years ago. It's got 40 years old." He says, "How come you never got a new one?" I says, "Did you ever hear anyone getting or trading in a Stradivarius?" And that stopped him in tracks.
But is that a Stradivarius in your mind?
Oh, yes. It just sings and speaks to me. Yeah.
Could you demonstrate something for us?
Sure.
Maybe just sort of what the keyboard sounds like.
Sure. I will play the one that I'm very happy with, and it did a lot for me, was the Mendelssohn Concerto. And this was the piece that I auditioned for the Philadelphia Orchestra. Now, you can imagine, Lorne Monroe, who happened to be the first cellist of the orchestra back in the 53, and Teresa Costello, I think that's what her name. She was a harpist. Now, I'm sitting down. She said, "What would you mm-hmm. like to play?" I said, mm-hmm. "The Mendelssohn Concerto, third movement." They looked at each other. Is this kid
on
okay?
An accordion,
is he
right?
Serious? Yes. So this is what it was. Have the ending.
Wow, bravo, bravo.
I have to play the ending because it's almost a replica of what the violinist does.
And what's great is you got the job, and I mean, you auditioned for Eugene Ormandy.
It was the first time in the history of the orchestra that an accordion wow. had performed, and it might be interesting for your audience to know that on the same program was Anna Maffa.
Wow!
And she was just getting her start in the opera business, opera world.
Were you nervous?
Much so, yes. In fact, when I auditioned for Ormandy the second time, I didn't think I had a chance to win because I was up against Curtis students, vocal arts students, and here I am, accordion player, a talent, vocal, instrumental, and so forth. After I had performed, I was walking out of the building. I said, I don't have a chance. And the woman came back and got me. She says, "Where are you going?" I said, "There's too much talent. I don't belong here. This is not my niche, I don't think." She says, "Don't be so surprised." So she called me back, and sure enough, to make a long story short, I was selected as it was a senior student concert, and I played an accordion concerto that was unknown at the time, and I was only 18, so they came to me and said, "What would you like to play?" I had no idea. So they did some research and came up with the concerto in D minor, and the rest is history, as they say.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's a great story. Your film is full of Joe's stories about performing for Ormandy, playing with the Philadelphia Orchestra, many other stories like that. The Arthur Godfrey Show, you're probably too young to remember that.
Right. Yeah, I had to look that one up.
But he was a big deal in his day.
Mm-hmm.
And you even have some audio of him talking about Joe Soprani, sort of very dated sounding radio show, I should say.
Right. Yeah, that actually came very early on in the production process with the film, because Joe had played the audio for me a while back, and it was the introduction that Arthur Godfrey gave to him. And it's funny and it's light. And then I wanted to juxtapose that with the beginning of the film of Joe playing now, present day. So we have that audio intro from the early 50s, and then it says, "And here he is, Joe Soprani," and then he plays, and he's playing present day. We did a performance shoot with a full band.
Well, and you played with, and again, this, you know, this is Philly, what, back in the 40s or 30s, I don't even have my dates, but there's a Horn and Hardart.
Oh, I was on there for 6 years. I started actually with Jack Steck on WFIL, used to be on 46 The Market. Yes. And then he switched. It was television. Everybody went television. So I was 11 years old, and I was on television from that time on. Then I was with the Horn and Hardart Children's Hour for 6 years, and I was invited back for the 30th anniversary. I was always being called back for different functions, and still at it.
And still at it. Why? But, I mean, you are a virtuoso. What do you think is it about you and that instrument that you're so good at it?
That's a good question. I don't know.
You don't know?
No, but I know that I'm feeling the music that's coming out, and it's all together. It's accompaniment, and I'll give you a little illustration of the Manhattan Concerto. I can do that with any other instrument.
Oh, well, that's sort of, what do you, I mean, you're a recording engineer. What do you, what, and you've worked with Joe.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see as his, has his gifts?
Well, I think the interesting thing that I've learned, well, among the many things that, I've learned from Joe, the expressive qualities of the instrument are really remarkable. We cover this a little bit in the film, but, you know, typically when you play the piano, you hit a chord and it kind of decays. Or, you know, and it's kind of it. And then with a violin, it's known as being a little bit more of a lyrical thing. You can put a little more expression into it. And the accordion, to me, kind of combines both of those worlds because you have this lyrical, expressive quality that a violin would have, but you can also accompany yourself. And it's portable, and you can walk around and all of that. But, you know, even having those qualities available in the instrument doesn't make it what Joe does with it, you know. And so what I see, the music that comes out of him is unexplainable, and that's why we love music so much. We can't put words to it.
Well, and to me, it's sort of like rubbing your stomach and patting your head. I'm trying to do things that just, at least in my world, you know, it would be really hard to
I've
do.
I've got it down to a science.
You do. Do you play every day?
I do, and since I started working on the documentary, 4 and 5 hours a day.
Yeah.
As I get older, the hands, the fingers don't move the way they used to. And sometimes I'm frustrated. After a four-hour session, I say, oh, nothing's working. And I felt good this morning. It must be the company on there.
Oh, it must be. It absolutely must be.
And your audience.
Indeed. Well, let's take a very short break, and we'll get back to our conversation, music as well. And Joe Soprani, our guest today on Radio Times, a virtuoso accordion player, as you can certainly hear. He joins us along with Brendan McGeehan, who has done a documentary about Joe Soprani called Dizzy Fingers, The Life of Joe Soprani. In fact, it will have its debut on Sunday, March 9th at 7 o'clock. At World Cafe Live. And in fact, Joe will be performing with a full live band before the film. Stay with us. Much more after this very short break. We'll be right back.
The Pennsylvania School for the Deaf supports WHYY, providing specialized educational services for students ages 3 to 21 who are deaf and hard of hearing. PSD's comprehensive bilingual curriculum includes written and spoken English, American Sign Language, and challenging academics designed to build critical and creative thinking, self-reflection and social skills, and world citizenship. More at PSD.org. The Pennsylvania School for the Deaf. Pride, strength, determination.
This week on This American Life, twin 13-year-old girls who do not get along.
I got to see her when I wake up, when I go to sleep, and I don't like her.
By chance, their middle school is run by twin brothers, Ronnie and Reggie Richardson.
They're like, whoa, no, that's totally against twin code. Let's talk about this.
Seeing yourself and others and where that leads this week.
Tonight at 10 on WHYY.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Next time on Here and Now, long shots to win, but still worthy Oscar nominees, including Her, the love story between a man and his operating system.
I had this terrible thought. Are these feelings even real? Or are they just programming?
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
this afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoing, talking with accordionist Joe Soprani and filmmaker Brendan McGeehan. And I do want to play a song that's performed by our guest, Anna McCore, composed by Salvatore Desposito. Let's listen. Composed by Salvatore Desposito, performed by our guest Joe Soprani, playing accordion. I'm curious about the kind of music that you like to play on the accordion.
I'm a classical guy.
Are you?
Yeah, from way back when. I always loved the classics. In fact, one of my ambitions early on was to play with a symphony orchestra, and I didn't know it was going to be the Philadelphia Orchestra. That was my dream. And there's a little story that the Bellevue Stratford had a concert trio for many years. It was violin, cello, and piano. And when the new management came in, they wanted to take the cello out and put an accordion in. Can you imagine?
Really?
So Lou Chaikin called me. God bless him. He was a great musician and did a lot of work in the city. He called me. He says, I want you to work with me at the Bellevue. I said, Lou, I don't know one tune. I said, I'm a classical accordion player. And he said very facetiously, can you read? I said, yes, I can. He said, come on, you'll make it. Make a long story short, I was there one season, and I was able to play all the tunes, all the show tunes that he had put in front of me. Actually, didn't put in front of me. There was no music. He had been there 25 years before I came into the picture. I stayed 6 years, and gave me the list, or as he was playing, I had to write down the tune, the key, and I had a library at home, and I did research and came up with a book for Lou Chaikin. So, but that's, I broke into that end of the business, and I got to like it. It was kind of a little side from what I was used to practicing 5 and 6 hours a day.
There's a lot of really interesting stories in this documentary, and I'll go back to you, Joe, but one involving the USO and a plane crash,
right.
and yes, exactly, kind of a traumatizing event as well.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see this documentary as a way of not only for us to get to know Joe, but also just to understand this period in Philadelphia, even in the Philadelphia region?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I haven't really thought of it like that, but Joe, you know, I mean this in the best way possible, he's been around long enough to...
He's 80 years old, yeah.
we get little, you know, slices of time, you know, throughout the piece and stories from different periods in his life. So, yeah, I think it's an interesting way to tell historical stories as well.
Well, this USO story is, I mean, it's a pretty scary thing that happened. And perhaps I'll have you tell it for us.
It happened on Thanksgiving Day, actually, November 26, 1953. And that was frightening. I just thought it was over.
And you were part of a USO tour. You were in the Far East, I guess.
Actually, it was because of the Godfrey Show. I got a call to do a USO show. And I was the band leader at 18, traveling with them throughout the Middle East. It was supposed to be the Pacific Isles also. And it was Korea, Japan, and the Pacific Islands. Well, we never got to the Pacific Islands because on November 26th, we had this mishap. We were going from one town to another, which was a routine flight. And we lost altitude. We're coming in on GCA with bad weather. And we overshot the runway, and the pilot was going 140 miles an hour when he hit the water. And I just made the sign of the cross, and I said goodbye.
Thinking this was it. Yeah, and it's a traumatizing event and a difficult one. And obviously, you made it, and it's still painful to think about. And I'm sorry to do that to you, Joe. But it's part of the documentary.
Yeah, and in fact, I don't know why I kind of got the idea in my head, but we have Joe telling the story on camera. But I thought something that would really heighten and do the story, the drama, the end of it would, we're going to do an animation segment.
Oh.
And so I've hired this animator to do this kind of dark, haunting illustration of the story and to really kind of, tell that whole element of it.
It's so hard for me to
I apologize. I didn't mean to do that to you. But what's amazing is you... Within a couple of years, you were flying again.
Never flown.
And you were.
I'm sorry. Yes, I did. I went into the Air Force band.
Yes, you did.
And I was a basket case. Every time I would get into the plane, I was a nervous wreck, and the members of the Air Force band knew it, and they would put me right next to an escape hatch with a bag in front of me, and I was white knuckles from the time I got into the plane until the time I got out. And when we went to the Far East, it was a 30-hour flight. In those days, with a four-engine prop plane, and I haven't flown since I left the service.
But you were obviously rescued,
and we were lucky, we were fortunate. They didn't expect any survivors.
Wow!
We saw lights come in our direction, and here we were floating with I think sub-zero weather, and we were just shivering our bodies. But we managed and we survived, but no one wanted to fly again.
No, so don't blame you.
We took a boat from Tokyo to California, and we took a train from California to Washington, and that took 3 days. And boy, that was tough.
Yeah, that was tough. I'd love to have you play something else for us, and I know that. You're a fan of Tchaikovsky and some of the Russian composers. Could you do a little bit of Romeo and Juliet?
Sure. This number I used in a contest, and I represented the United States Air Force Band in the Olympics. It's the Accordion Olympics. And I just missed first place. I was the alternate champion of the world representing the United States Air Force. That meant more to me than anything. Mm-hmm. And I'll try to get through a couple of segments of it.
Sure, that'd be great.
Thank you.
beautiful Romeo and Juliet performed by our guest accordionist Joe Soprani, and also with us here in our Philadelphia studio, Brendan McGeehan, who is a multi-instrumentalist recording engineer and has is working on a documentary about Joe called Dizzy Fingers, The Life of Joe Soprani. What's interesting, and just watching that, is on that section in the Romeo and Juliet, you really... You're just pulling that accordion apart to
get the air. That was tough to do after the flight story. So,
I mean, that takes a lot of strength and energy,
yes,
doesn't
it,
to pull it apart like that?
Yeah. In fact, I'll give you a little bit of the Dizzy Fingers.
Sure. Dizzy Fingers, and that happens to be the name of your documentary. Makes a lot of sense. Yes?
Yeah, I thought, you know, it's a flashy piece. It's a piece I wasn't familiar with until I met Joe, and it just, to me, it embodies who he is. His energy is so inspiring, and that piece just kind of, I think, ties it all together.
And it's composed by Zez Confrey.
Confrey. Yes. Yeah, way back when.
And is that something you've been, it's kind of something that you're known for playing?
No, not really. It was just a number in my repertoire. And I played it with the United States dance band years ago, but never used it that much because there's very few opportunities for an accordion to be accompanied by a jazz band. But I was with the National Guard band for 8 years, and I was the accordion soloist there, the 276 Army Band. And that was enjoyable.
Did your mother, who wanted you to play the accordion, did she know how good you became?
I don't know.
I mean, because it sounds like at a young age, I mean, you're playing local radio and TV shows here in Philadelphia and got on the Arthur Godfrey show. You were, what, 18 years old,
18,
something like that?
Yeah. I don't know. I just had the encouragement from my parents.
Right.
That was automatic. And my aunts and cousins and mother, and grandfather, and it was there. So I figured, you know, that love went to all of us. So I never... You know, thought I was being centered as the one with the ability to play an instrument. They all had an opportunity. My sister played. My cousins played.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
But so it was a kind of, and I assume people in the neighborhood, would you get together and jam?
Sometimes, yes. Yeah. Yeah. I was always asked to play church affairs and different accordion clubs and so forth throughout the year.
There's a great scene in your film, Brendan, where Joe's talking about how he can't sit still. I mean, he can't sit still and watch TV. He's just got, you know, ants in his pants, mm-hmm. I guess.
Yeah, and I think that plays to the title, too, the Dizzy Fingers thing. Right. It's kind of like, jumping up and down and being lively, and I think that's it keeps him going, and, you know, it's very
even at
focusing.
This point, energy, I guess.
You got a lot of energy. Abundance.
Yeah. It's great.
Yeah.
It is great. You taught for how many, in the Philadelphia public school system for...
Well, I started at the New Power Conservatory, which was a very, very fine accordion conservatory, and I became the assistant director of that school until the 60s, and we had a great staff, and... everybody was going out to different pastures, and I remained because my love for the accordion was so great. I saw the demise of our instrument, I stayed with it till the end. And after a point, we couldn't I couldn't make a living with that. So I ended up getting a teacher's degree in Philadelphia, and I spent 20 years at Lamberton High School, and I had some great students, and they have great stories to tell. I hope I see them at the documentary.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you talk to some of those students, Brandon?
Yeah. Well, we talked to a very young student because I wanted to show this kind of passing of the torch idea, because he has his teaching has passed on, you know, years and years and years. So, yeah. And a lot of them have certainly come out since they've heard about the film and saying how they're very excited to see it and how much he's had an impact on their life.
You enjoy teaching?
I love it. I love it. Yes. Yeah.
And just because kids are sort of hungry to learn and you get to show them how to play an instrument?
Yeah, I would show them the way. In fact, I'd get a lot of calls. I had a call from a student of years back, and they thanked me for getting him into teaching. And one gentleman said, I'm making a lot of money teaching.
Oh. You know,
that was then with the EC programs, and he's doing well as a young man. And I was so glad to hear that. I have many students out there. In fact, I go back and perform for my former students' concerts or programs, and that's a joy. That's a pleasure.
You mentioned the fact that you had such a supportive family. It sounds like a very musical family as well. Did you have a teacher or certain teachers that you felt really showed you the way?
I had teachers from the very beginning, elementary school.
In school?
In school, at public school, and they always saw potential in me, which I didn't see at the time. And I would play the accordion in the orchestra. Now, usually today, they would say, hey, you have to play a trombone or you have to play a saxophone. What, an accordion?
Yeah.
They never took that away from me. And I guess subconsciously, I read something into that, said, I have to stay with this. I went to junior high school, and I met up with a piano player, and we did piano duos together. And that's where I learned to use accordion with piano accompaniment. And I still use that today.
And you've been playing, I think I did the math right, 75 years? Is that
That's about right. I started when I was five.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
And as you described, you know, those early practice sessions. And I know. You hear all your friends playing outside, right?
I really wanted to give it up. It was too much for me. And then Brendan comes along.
Right. You were going to retire until this guy came into your life. Thanks a lot.
Well, it's nice to hear.
Do you play an instrument yourself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm mostly a bass player, but I play a couple other things as well.
And how long have you been a recording engineer?
Probably going on somewhere 8 to 10 years, something like that. Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation, and I'm going to open up the lines for our listeners as well. We are talking with virtuoso accordionist Joe Soprani, born in West Philadelphia, lives just outside the city. He has been playing this instrument for 75 years. Also with us, Brendan McGeehan. He's a multi-instrumental recording engineer. He's also working on a film about Joe Soprani called Dizzy Fingers, The Life of Joe Soprani. It will have its debut at World Cafe Live on Sunday, March 9th at 7 o'clock. And in fact, Joe Soprani will be performing with a full live band before the film. 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
People's Light and Theater presents Pride and Prejudice, running February 26th through March 30th. A classic will-they-or-won't-they love story. The battle of wits and will between Elizabeth Bennet and Mr. Darcy is as passionate and funny as ever in this new dance-filled adaptation of Jane Austen's masterpiece. For tickets, peopleslight.org or 610-644-3500. People's Light supports WHYY.
On the next Fresh Air, New York Times Cairo Bureau Chief and Mideast Correspondent David Kirkpatrick tells us about his investigation into the 2012 attack on the American mission in Benghazi and about events in Egypt, where he says the government crackdown on protests and political opposition is unlike anything in modern Egyptian history. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Who fights the fight against those who want to end tax support for public broadcasting?
It does not save a penny. This legislation does not serve any fiscal purpose.
Representative Henry Waxman, friend of public broadcasting, nemesis of the tobacco lobby, leaving Congress. What's next for Waxman? That's next time on The Takeaway.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen, talking with Joe Soprani and Brendan McGeehan, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Well, Joe, I'd love to have you do a section of Flight of the Bumblebee.
Oh,
how could we say no to that? This is, of course, Rimsky-Korsakov.
See how far I can get.
Okay, fair enough. Amazing. Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov, Flight of the Bumblebee, performed by our guest, virtuoso accordionist Joe Soprani. And what our listeners couldn't see is that there was a certain part where you were just sort of like a bumblebee, sort of rubbing the accordion
that's
to your chest.
That's the bellow shake. That's a bellow
the
shake.
The bellow shake.
And it's just a... And that equals the tremolo of the violin. Then there's another technique, which is a triple bellow shake. And you go. Rather than just the
right.
open and closing.
Right.
It's a technique that I developed a long time ago, and a lot of the modern accordionists are using that. And all it is a triple bellow shake.
Well, and it's great because it's such a, I mean, you use your body so much
with this
instrument.
Yeah.
We have, looks like Mark from Phoenixville to join our conversation. And Mark, go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question was, what runs through your head when you hear the string bands play in the Mummers Parade and the accordions up front?
That seems like a leading question, Mark, I have to say.
Well,
let's find out. Go ahead, Joseph Brown.
Good question. I would never play the Mummers Parade because of the accordion. It would be just, with the weather conditions, the way they are during that time, I wouldn't subject my Hohner accordion to that kind of climate. But, you know, if the person likes it, who am I to say what they should do? And I love the sound, so there used to be many more accordions than there are today, but that has stopped. Now it's almost like a dance band arrangements that some of them are pretty good. I don't frown upon it. I encourage anything that has an accordion.
I figured we would get to that. Mark, thanks for the call to Radio Times. You can call as well. And again, that phone number, 1-888-477-9499. Are there certain things you have to do to take care of an accordion? Does it require oiling or
not nothing?
Not a thing.
Nothing. If you have a good accordion, it more or less takes care of itself. Of course, climate. If it's too hot, now because of the dryness, I have to put a humidifier while I'm practicing because the reeds have a felt pad underneath, and if they get too brittle, it causes a leak. So it has to be kind of fuzzy, if you would, if that's the right word. But I have very little maintenance to be concerned about the accordion.
Brendan, you said that you first met Joe when he came to you because he wanted to learn Final Cut Pro.
Pro Tools.
Oh, Pro Tools, rather. Mm-hmm. Did he learn Pro Tools?
We're still working on it.
Yes, no.
I don't have to learn now. I have the master.
I have someone who can do it.
Well, it's very hard for me to, you know, play something and reach over to my panel and try to function everything that's going on. It's just a maze.
Right. Yes.
And I'm amazed at some of these sound engineers who have a 4x8 board that they know every little knob to it. So Brendan's great.
He gets around better in Pro Tools than a lot of people I know.
And what's the difference between being a recording engineer and being a filmmaker? Besides everything.
Right. It's a good question. I think it's interesting what, you know, I came in through the music side of things, but I do see a lot of parallels, especially if you, you know, broaden recording engineer to producer, because I see the engineering and the production side of things. It's kind of like that with filmmaking because you have a crew. It's more elements that come together. In the recording studio, you have musicians and producers and engineers that have to collaborate, and it's a very controlled environment. But then when you're making a film, you've got audio, camera, talent, all that sort of stuff, lighting, environmental things that you have to tackle. So it's almost a wider scope type of thing. But some of the same principles apply, at least as in my experience. I don't really know what I'm doing in filmmaking.
I don't think you're alone in that.
but you know, this is it's a lot of fun.
There's a great story in this. There are many great stories in this documentary, Joe, and one has to do with the Opera Company of Philadelphia.
Mm.
Yes,
I got called to play the La Traviata when it came to town a few years back, and they wanted me to play in there are two sections in the opera where they have a small ensemble, and they were called the La Banda section. And so I had had spoken to the librarian, said, okay, we'll get back to you. So no one was calling, so I called him, and he says, oh, we're not going to use the accordion, we just want you to use the last part. I says, you're going to just have me play a couple of minutes? How about if I arrange the accordion part for you? And he said, oh, okay. And that's what I did. And this is what we came up with. It was actually Susan Ashbaker, who was the music director at the time, and she was also a fantastic piano player. She was on it, and we had a cello, a flute, and myself. And this is what it was.
Giuseppe Verdi.
Giuseppe Verdi, yes.
That's great. You also played for it was Eisenhower's White House. Is that right? Did I read that right?
I was in the service at the time, right. So it was a natural for me to be part of that program or their programs that they had at the time. And that was interesting. And I only stayed 4 years, but the memories that I have with the Air Force Band will live forever. In fact, I'm going back this summer to perform with the Air Force Band.
Really?
And I'm doing a new piece that we collaborated together as far as the sound is concerned, the Italian Rhapsody. And
how
that's
nice
what
is
we're
that?
Going to be using. It's a new piece, and it was originally written for a concert band. And when I attended the reunion this past June, it seemed to be crying out for an accordion part. So when I got home, I got the score. And the rest is history, as they say. And I wrote, and with Brendan's help, we took out all the highs, and I ended up premiering this at Newman University just this past January, and it was a very big success.
Wow. Well, it's funny you talk about classical music because, again, in the documentary, we see the kind of work that he did with Bon Jovi, which is, you know, I don't know, from Ormandy to
Bon Jovi.
To Bon Jovi.
That was a great experience. He asked me to arrange one of his rock tunes for concert band. And
Lay Your Hands on Me.
Lay Your Hands on Me. Yes, a very big hit in those days. And it ended up being the soundtrack to the opening of his world 1998 world tour. Right. And that was quite an undertaking. And again, I said, do you have the music? Says, no. So I had to extract everything from the CD, and it took me hours and hours. But I enjoyed doing that, and it was great. It's still being played today. If you, your listeners want to just
Google it, or
Google it with YouTube. John Bon Jovi World Tour 1998, I think it was, or six, one of the two.
Six, I think.
Six, 1996 tour.
And apparently, they had local, I guess, school bands that were
performing. Yes, that was the idea, to have local bands and colleges come in. While they're performing this particular piece. That was exciting.
Yeah, great. We have we interviewed Obie O'Brien, who was Bon Jovi's engineer, which, as a side note, was interesting to think that I'm making a documentary about an accordionist and I find myself at Bon Jovi's house interviewing the sound engineer down the rabbit hole. But yeah, he said that was the concept, was they wanted to get a flavor of wherever they were on tour. So we actually have a little bit of footage of a Japanese marching band.
Yeah, it's great.
Playing Joe's arrangement, which is, another thing is something really underrated with Joe is there's not a lot of repertoire for the accordions, you can probably imagine. So he has literally hundreds of arrangements that he's done adapting different music for his own instrument.
Oh. We have, looks like Anthony from Langhorne to join our conversation. Anthony, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hey, Joe. It's Anthony Sinagoga. How are you?
Oh, my former student.
This is your life.
Oh, my God. Oh.
So I'm driving, running some errands, and I turn the radio on, and this accordion music is coming out. And I said, it really can only be one person, and it's got to be him. And sure enough, it is.
Oh, my God.
I had to call and just say that Joe was our orchestra director, you know, growing up in Lamberton and Overbrook. And my wife and I were students together, and we've gone on to get married, and this week was our 13th wedding anniversary. And we have two kids who are musicians also.
Wow.
And I really, Joe is such a driving force behind, you know, my wife now being a music director and our kids and just the love of music. There is nobody better than Joe. It really is something else. And I'm thrilled about the documentary. We're going to do all we can to be there on the 9th.
Oh, Anthony.
Oh, there you have it.
Oh, man.
I think you took his breath away, Anthony.
You made my day, Anthony.
Well, you made our lives almost, Joe. I mean, it's really something else. So just wanted to get the call in and say thanks.
Oh, thanks.
You know, when I heard it on the radio, I said there can only be one accordion player on the radio in Philadelphia, and there he is.
Oh, God. God love you, man.
Thank you, Anthony.
Love the Beth.
All right. Thanks.
See you.
No, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Sometimes, you know, it's only a caller can do that.
Oh, I had such wonderful years. He was my drummer, and I was the accordion player in the ensemble. And Beth Titcom, his wife, was the saxophone player, top musician.
Yeah. This is a weird segue here, but in the documentary, there are a number of accordion jokes. People telling accordion jokes.
Oh, I knew.
We couldn't resist.
You're right.
Yeah, we couldn't resist. So, yeah, there's a segment we're calling Squeezebox 101 because I had a couple motives in the documentary. It's certainly about Joe, but I did want to include some bits about the instrument and a little bit of history and a little bit of how it's coming back, and then, we couldn't resist, because it actually was not intentional. It turned into a thing with everybody I interviewed. They kind of brought in an accordion joke that they knew. I didn't even ask. But then I started asking once we got a couple, so we have a little montage of jokes.
Do you have a favorite accordion joke, Joe?
Well, I said there's 100 accordions at the bottom of the sea. So who cares?
Oh, that's terrible.
Or the fellow who's had his car broken into and he had an accordion on the seat. He went to find out another one was there. They left another accordion.
Right.
Can you imagine that? if it was a honer, it would be worth it.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Well, look, it's just been such a great pleasure to have you with us on Radio Times. Joe Soprani, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
And just to sort of recap here, our guest, Joe Soprani, born in West Philadelphia, lives now out in the suburbs and has played accordion for about 75 years. He spent many years teaching in the Philadelphia public school system. He played with the Philadelphia Orchestra with Eugene Ormandy. He also played with tenor Luciano Pavarotti. We didn't have a chance to talk about him. But you can find out more about Joe Soprani if you go to World Cafe Live Sunday, March 9th at the premiere of a documentary that our other guest, Brenda McGeehan, has done. It's called Dizzy Fingers, The Life of Joe Soprani. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes and you can find out more about this program. We had several engineers who set us up today, including Joyce Lieberman, Al Banks, and Kevin Griffin. Patty Leswing produced this hour of Radio Times, and we do want to close things out with The Soft Summer Breeze, composed by Eddie Haywood, performed by our guest.